Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
I fell in love with movies when I saw Star Wars at about 5 years old, when the spaceship comes flying over your head and it's like a whole new world opened up.
For many of us, there was a moment we can remember when movies went from being something that was pure entertainment to something that spoke to us on a gut level.
I watched Beauty and the Beast probably, I think I went like six times 1 week when it came out. And because I definitely identified with Belle. And I think that definitely awoke something in me where I was like, oh, you know, I belong somewhere else. There's some bigger destiny for me.
From PureX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today, a Mortified mixtape, where we tackle two sides of one topic. And in honor of it being award season, we present How Not to Win an Oscar. Dueling stories of teenagers who love movies so much, they set out to create their own cinematic gold. One who set out to make an epic Hollywood blockbuster in the suburbs of Minnesota. And the other, up first, a teenager who dreamed of writing more personal, artier films about the human condition.
My favorite movie is Cabaret. It's my favorite movie of all time. And there's a scene towards the end where a crying Liza Minnelli is kind of being called out that she's not going to ever make it. And through the tears, she says, no, I'm going to be a big star someday. You'll see.
Here's Alex Staggs, recorded at King King in Los Angeles.
I'll be performing a series of lines from plays and films that at 17 and 18 I was either not talented enough or too lazy to actually write. So instead I just wrote these incredible moments. You can't handle the truth type moments. Thinking that with myself starring in these moments, they were so powerful that you could really just fill in all of the details and all of the plot later on. Which of course I never did. So I'm just left with these. These are my Oscar-winning moments. I'm tired of hiding it. I'm tired of writing in these damn little books. Here, take them. Read all of them. It's all in here. Everything I am is in here. Burn them if you want to, so you won't get diseased or infected.
I just thought, yeah, that needs to be written down. This is powerful. And you're like, oh, that's it? I feel like all these moments are exploring the idea that it's all me coming out. I mean, all of it. It's all that. All me standing up for myself, standing in my truth. And then, you know, the camera would slowly pan in on a single tear as the wind blew. And, you know, I, although beaten down, had claimed my truth finally. So maybe I was just practicing coming out.
I know this is a lot for you to comprehend. How do you think I feel? Look, take your time to think things over. It's your decision. If you want me in your life, good. Because I want to be. If not, you better be sure. Because I will walk out that door. And I will never come back! Things I thought I'd never want, I need. People I thought I'd never be with, I am. Things I thought I'd never know, I do.
Yes.
More than ever. My boyfriend loves this one. I know I can never lead a life as a faggot. No one can ever know. If they did, it would kill me. And if I keep it inside, I will die. So, I'm left to this. A bottle of pills and a glass of water. It's going to be hard to do. But no one stays awake forever. Mama! I'm the same person I always was. No! Everything about you is different. It writes itself. This is what the world was like once. This is what it can never be like again. This time, it's my choice, on my terms. No one else's. A little happy movie there, about finding yourself. I surrender. Just infect me. Give me whatever you got and get it over with. I've run out of weapons to fight it. I'm being screwed out of more holes than I have. And this one's actually a short little scene between two brothers, a younger brother and an older brother. Of course, I would play both roles. It's like I don't have anything to believe in. What do you mean? Well, like God and all that religious stuff. I don't know if it's really true. Do you believe in all that? The way I see it, the Bible is just a book. One that everybody buys and nobody reads. What should I believe in? Well, don't believe in God, Bobby. If you think God's going to make all your problems go away, all my problems go away, if you believe in that, you'll be miserable and even more confused till you die. What do you believe in? I believe in a beautiful day. A good movie, music that makes you cry, and getting dressed up to go to the theater once in a while. That's what I believe. Do you know what it's like to feel like your father wants to molest you? That's a personal favorite of mine because in that story, he hasn't molested me yet, but I know he wants to. It's just not a good feeling. Yes, my son. I feel dirty. No, diseased. Like some cancer is inside of me, destroying me piece by piece, and no matter how hard I fight, I can't keep myself from falling apart like a dandelion.
Came out to my dad after watching the movie Powder. We watched it in our living room and we both cried because it was like very, I don't know, really touched us. And I just thought, this is it. I have to know now. I think my dad said he loved me after the movie for some reason. I think we were getting kind of teary. And I just thought, I have to know if he really means it. And you know, what better moment than after the emotional catharsis of Powder? I said, I have to tell you something. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. But I'm gay. And he said, I think he said, I don't care. And I said, well, then hug me. And he gave me a big hug and it was over. It was very sweet. But it was completely undramatic. Like there was no drama at all.
And because I think I thought my range as an actor was limitless at 17, I'm pretty sure this is a role for me to play a female ex-slave or sharecropper.
I mean, the one scene I think I love the most is, you know, the one that's clearly kind of imitating The Color Purple, because I had read the book a bunch of times and seen the movie. And I just cannot believe that I wrote, you know, a monologue for myself. I mean, I think I imagined that I would perform it, or I don't know, but as a female sharecropper, it's just so offensive on so many levels. I thought I could hold my own with Alice Walker is just insane to me.
When you walk out into that field, that sun can burn you up until all that's left is some black ash that was your bones. Some days I walk out there and I think, today is the day. I'm not gonna sit here and not move a muscle until every bit of me is blowing in the wind, free as a bird in the sky. But every day, just before I feel that flame bursting underneath me, I get myself up and I say, not today. I ain't finished just yet. My freedom's out there, though, waiting for me whenever I want it.
And it says here I wipe my brow.
Maybe today, 'cause that thermometer, it's reading 95. And we is plumb out of water.
Thank you.
That was Alex Staggs in Los Angeles, with live score at the end written by Gordon Bash and performed on stage by the Mortified After School Orchestra. And now, side B of today's Mortified mixtape to not winning an Oscar. While Alex only bothered to write down the most dramatic movie moments, our second reader wrote out entire screenplays, and then, aspiring to be the next Spielberg, set out to film them.
I expressed interest in making movies when I was in high school, and so my dad got me a video camera. It was meant for recording family events and stuff like that, but I used the hell out of that thing.
That's Jason Smith. And with each new movie he made with his friends, his productions became more and more ambitious.
Movie after movie, it was every weekend for some of the summers and winters, you know, it was all the time, and they just kept getting bigger and bigger, and we attempted to make a movie about a guy who was on the run from the mob, and we filmed in like a bank. They let us film during business hours in a bank. We made one movie called Bambi Killers and Tree Huggers. That started because I got pulled over one day for speeding. And instead of getting a ticket, I talked the cop into letting me film at the jail. They moved the drunks out of the cells for us so that we could have two cells all to ourselves to film in. Every single time we asked to film somewhere, they said yes, every single time.
That reception doesn't just speak to Jason's drive. It's evidence of just how much everyone wants to take part in making a movie. And so, armed with all that enthusiasm and support, Jason set out to create one final film before graduating high school. His biggest production yet. Here's Jason on the Mortified stage, along with some very special guests, helping him bring his epic screenplay to life. Featuring voices you may recognize from Kids in the Hall, Freaks and Geeks, Revenge of the Nerds, Desperate Housewives, and Lord of the Rings. Here are Elijah Wood, Busy Phillips, Kevin MacDonald, James Denton, and reading stage directions, Curtis Armstrong.
For movie number 20, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to make a movie that would impress my dad. My dad had always helped me making all these films. He built props and stuff. And so I decided to do something that he would be really into. He was really into car racing. So I wrote a comedy about a guy racing his Isuzu Pup pickup truck in the Indianapolis 500. My dad got totally into it. He built this big mock-up IndyCar cockpit that we could sit in and shoot. I got all my friends to help me out, 25 friends to come be in the cast and crew. I got a real racetrack to let us go shoot there. So one day I got 25 of my friends to drive 2 hours south of Minneapolis to go shoot this movie. When I wrote it, of course, I had all these fantasies that it would be full of big, incredible Hollywood stars and stuff like that. And tonight, in what is sure to be the most surreal night of my life, those dreams come true. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you 500 miles to Indy, as it was originally meant to be seen.
Scene one, racetrack.
Early morning. Time trials. Light fog. The track timer calls a name. Hobart Drizzle? Through the fog, on the track, appears a blue 1986 Isuzu Pup pickup truck. Damn, teenager, get off the track! The truck pulls up and stops at the starting line. What the Sam hell do you think you're doing? I don't think we've met. I'm Hobart Drizzle. Cut to. During the first race of the season, in Drizzle's rear view, another car blows from the smoke. He looks at the number and picks up his CB.
Hey, any of you guys tell me who car number one is?
At the pits, his crew chief picks up a program and flips through it.
Well, Hobart, that's J.J. Logan.
What kind of track record?
Pretty nice from the looks of it. A lot of first place marks, including 3 Indy wins.
Suddenly, Logan's car passes him very quickly.
Holy cow!
And just like that, Logan wins the race. Later, at the finish line, Drizzle arrives in the midst of celebration. Logan removes the helmet, and long hair falls out. It reveals that, in fact, she is quite female. Drizzle is taken a bit aback. Another win for the just about legendary J.J. Logan. How's it feel?
Another win.
She notices Drizzle but continues with the interview. She gives him a cool smile and then ignores him. Drizzle is totally in love, but still totally cool. Scene 2. Hobart's garage after the race. The garage door opens. It is the enigmatic woman driver, J.J. Logan. She walks slowly to the front of Hobart's truck, caresses the door frame, and eyes its hood.
This your Isuzu in the race today?
Yes, ma'am, it was.
How far are you planning to go with this thing?
The other drivers look at Hobart.
As far as it'll take me.
Scene 8. Evil race car driver Emil Spoto. Leads Hobart to the top of a high hill.
Everything you see belongs to me. What do you think?
Everything here?
All you can see. Hobart, how would you like to own this estate? Own the people?
What?
Watch.
He snaps his fingers at the gardener and points to some flowers.
What are these?
Gladiolus, sir.
They look awful. Get rid of them.
Yes, sir.
True power. The land, the servants, everything. It can be yours.
I don't get it.
Join me, Drizzle. Join the Spuddle Racing Team. With you at my side, we will take Indy by storm, and the trophy will be ours. The only thing that matters once you've won is who you have on your side. What strings you can pull and what lives you control makes the difference in being a winner of a car race and a legend among men. If people can't live without you, you will never die.
I've been from one end of this place to another, and I've seen some pretty crazy people. But ain't none of them ever said something as crazy as what you just told me. Nobody lives forever. Doesn't matter how important you are. When God wants you back, there ain't a bunker in the whole world that'll protect you. You know, you'll probably win a lot of races, Mr. Spodo. Become a rich and powerful man. But you know something? After a while, nobody's gonna be on your side when you win anymore. If you win Indy, your pit crew won't pour champagne on your head. Because you might fire them. And nobody will make you dinner. You're a scary man, Mr. Spodo. And you're gonna be the loneliest man that ever drove a car on the face of this earth. I can find the parking lot myself.
So I called up the Minnesota Film Board and I put out an ad for movie extras, like in the movies. And 30 people showed up to the racetrack thinking they were gonna be in a real movie, not just some kid's camcorder thing. But they were Minnesotans, so they sat there, they didn't complain. So imagine 30 angry, hot, but very polite Minnesotans sitting in the background of the Indianapolis 500.
Scene 11. There is a terrible fiery crash on pit road. The crew chief comes on the radio.
Hey, Drizzle, there's a crash on pit road.
The firemen rush out and put out the fire. But the medics rush to get the racer to an ambulance.
Who is it?
It's first place driver.
Well, that's JJ.
Is she okay?
I don't know.
CPR isn't working. A medic up and pounds on JJ's chest. Medics shock her. She does not respond.
What's going on?
Hobart, why don't you pull in? It's gonna be a long yellow flag.
Drizzle pulls in and rolls down his window.
Hobart, oh, geez, JJ's dead.
Engine and track noises fade away. The audience stands and takes off their hats.
Now, after 4 hours of shooting in the 92-degree sun, I thought I'd check the tape. Static. The camera was broken. I had a second camera, but all the batteries were dead. So after 4 hours of shooting out in the 92-degree sun with 55 people who'd driven 2 hours just to get there, and my dad watching me, I had to go thank everyone for coming and tell them that it was time to go home. And I felt like such an idiot because my dad was right there. So later that night, after we all went home and my dad helped me put all the props away, and I told him I felt so stupid that I got all those people to come out there on account of me and waste their time, and that I got him to take a day off of work for some stupid movie that didn't even work. But he smiled at me and he put his arm around me and he said, "You know what? There are worse ways to spend the day." And now we go to the Indy 500, the real Indy 500, just about every year. So, this is the never-before-seen ending to 500 miles to Indy that we couldn't film that day because the cameras were broke.
Engine and track noises fade away. The audience stands and takes off their hats. J.J. Logan, legendary hero woman driver, is dead. Drizzle's face twists into an expression of anger. He faces forward and roars out of the pits as the crew chief watches. The crowd goes wild. It's lap 194. Only six more laps until the checkered flag falls and the Indianapolis 500 is over. And Hobart Drizzle is fighting for the lead.
Drizzle races hard and passes cars left and right. The crowd is going crazy. He passes the crew chief, who gives him a nod.
Go for it, Hobart.
He catches up to the leader, Emil Spoto, his mortal enemy, who fights hard. Drizzle's truck is shaking apart. They take a hard corner, neck and neck. A hubcap flies off and bounces away. Now they're side by side with one lap to go. He looks through his side window at Spoto.
You're nothing, Drizzle! You should have joined me when you had the chance!
Who are you even racing for?
Drizzle turns forward, grips the steering wheel, close on Hobart's eyes.
For JJ.
He jams on the gas and races for all he's got. At the finish line, the winner is Hobart Drizzle by only 3 inches. The closest finish in racing history. The crew leaps and hugs each other. Cameras flash. The crew is jovial.
Congratulations!
Thanks!
So how's it feel to be on the crew of an Indy winner?
Great!
So where is Mr. Drizzle?
Hey, anybody know where Hobart is?
He's not on the track.
Ain't in his garage.
Well, where is he?
Drizzle rolls down his window, drives away on the open highway. He faced impossible odds and never gave up. He's a real winner. Drizzle and his pickup disappear in the distance while the credits roll. The end.
That was Jason Smith, and before him, Alex Staggs, sharing their childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. And special thanks to Elijah Wood, Kevin McDonald, James Denton, Curtis Armstrong, and Busy Phillips. Now we followed up with Jason in our postmortem, FIDE, and found out that despite his filmmaking woes as a teenager, his love for movies has never gone away. In fact, it's a passion he's wasted no time introducing to his children.
I had always wanted to do a cool Halloween costume where I incorporated my daughter. So I made the Aliens Loader costume from the movie Aliens, where Ripley is driving the robot suit and fights the alien with it. So my daughter was Ripley and I was the suit, and you couldn't see my face, but you saw her. And, you know, she's 6 months old, but she loved it. She loved seeing all the costumes at the party and just was like smiling.
And as it turned out, Jason's daughter wasn't the only one whose imagination was sparked that night.
We took a picture of my daughter in the costume, and a friend of mine put it online, and it went viral instantly, and it became this huge deal. They're showing us on the Good Morning America, and we were on a couple of the nighttime talk shows. For a week there, I had the most famous baby in the world.
And though Jason's high school films never got him anything close to that coveted teenage Oscar, getting to nurture his daughter's imagination, just like his dad had done for him, has been more valuable than any award he could hope to win.
Now she's older, and every single day she tells me what she wants to be for Halloween. Every single day. And every day it's different. Yesterday, she told me she wanted to be Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, and she wanted me to be Hermie the elf. The day before, she wanted to be Hello Kitty dressed as Supergirl, and I love that. I'm trying to teach my daughters to be good storytellers. Everything is stories, everything. It's not just TV that's stories and movies that are stories, but politics is a story, being a doctor is a story, telling a patient what they've been through is a story. Every single thing in life is a story. Telling stories is critical in our lives, and I hope to God that I'm passing those skills on to my daughters. I hope so. And I'm excited to see where they go and to hear what stories they tell and to see what their story is. I've had a wonderful story, and I hope that I can make their story even better.
This concludes our Mortified mixtape teaching you how not to win an Oscar. where we learn that sometimes the most impactful movies aren't the ones that end up projected onto the silver screen, but the ones kids scrawl in their notebooks that never see the light of day. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. As many of you know, the Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, who celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork. And if you're interested in supporting our podcast, please email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Kathy Tu, Pierce Priscelli, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Katcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake Snake Snakes. Additional thanks to Lance Roberts Studios, Will Dwyer, Aparna Kumar, Tamar Avishay, Eric Bass, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived.